Let's talk books. And standing by is Lisa Glass. Hi there.
Kia ora, Jesse. How are you?
Good. We talk books, book reviews and writing each Tuesday just after two. And you've been at the library. Good for you.
I have, but I've also been at my local independent bookstore, Books of Plenty in Tauranga, which has been there, I think, since the 20s, and it's kind of got a bit of a jaunty 20s name to it, Books of Plenty. And the lovely staff there filled me in on these books that I'm going to talk about today. They said they've been getting a lot of good feedback from them, and just coincidentally, because we always do try to have a theme rather than just here's some books, they've got quite a lot in common.
Yeah.
So big ups to Chris and the team at Books of Plenty. Much better to get humans giving you recommendations than algorithms.
Whereabouts is it? And tell me a bit about the store.
It's right in downtown Tauranga. It's always warm and busy and friendly and chatty. It's on Grey Street, and I definitely recommend a visit. Tell them Lisa sent you, and I won't get any kickbacks, but they'll give me a big smile next time.
Great. So what have you discovered there?
So these three books, all very recent, all Australian, all by women, and all with a bit of a mystery at the centre of them and a strange link to the year 1992. Which is interesting that you're doing the 80s albums, and so it's a bit of a retro day.
Yeah, it's all tying together today.
Yeah, and I don't know what was so special about 1992. I remember it being distinctly unspecial. Maybe that's more a reflection on me at that age rather than the time.
What do I remember? There was a good Cricket World Cup that year. It was my sixth form year, so fairly emotionally intense. But I can't remember what was happening in the world.
Well, I'll give you a couple of hints later on, but these novels did make me sort of think, oh, 1992 might have been a bit of a dark and interesting time if I'd paid a bit more attention. So the three of them, I'll just give you the names first and then I'll go through them. The first one is Islands by Peggy Frew. The second is, the next one is The Van Arpel Girls Are Gone by Felicity McLean. And the third is The Artist's Portrait by Julie Keyes. And The Artist's Portrait is the one I'm going to talk about first.
Mm-hmm.
It's a first novel, but she's one of these people that came to novel writing, I won't say later in life, but after she's done some other interesting things. She's been a nurse, she's been a youth worker, and she's done all kinds of other things before writing this novel. Her bio doesn't say anything about her having studied art, but this book is actually tells you quite a bit about art, and certainly to me, because I knew very little. It's centred on a fictional woman painter called Muriel Kemp, who's living in Sydney from World War One onwards. And although the name of it, The Artist's Portrait, and the setting might have you thinking it's quite a tidy, not predictable, but you know, formulaic historical novel with perhaps some romance and heartbreak on offer, it's actually got quite a bit more challenging subject matter. It touches on sexual domination, violence, manipulation, and some quite overt social commentary about how female artists were treated historically, including by male artists, which is quite, disappointing but also interesting.
Okay, so that's called The Artist's Portrait. And where does 1992 come into it?
We go back and forth, not back and forth in time, but we realise eventually that the story of the 20s is being told in retrospect from 1992, because our other protagonist is a young woman in 1992 who meets Muriel, the artist, by chance, and she co-opts her into piecing together her memoir. Muriel's quite elderly by this stage and very prickly, although that's not a function of her age. She's always been quite prickly. And she tells this young woman, Jane, she was once a painter and was quite well regarded, and Jane's never heard of her. So she looks up some information and finds out that Muriel supposedly died in 1936.
Hey, now you're talking.
So it's sort of a...
So does that make it a sort of a mystery book then?
It's a history mystery. I've seen it described as I was going to say, gender-bending, genre-bending. It does have its fair share of twists and turns, but the mystery... I didn't find the mystery to be the driving force. That was sort of a bit of extra flavour to it. But I just wanted to keep reading to enjoy the ride rather than find out the answers, you know, in the way that the plot wasn't the main thing to me. It was just learning more about Muriel. The story doesn't buy into the sort of easy descriptions that sometimes we see of 20th century life, you know, cheeky street urchins and warm-hearted hookers. I mean, it does have urchins and hookers, but it's a lot less glib. And it's also, I found, quite a nice insight into the modernist art world of the time and the frustration that those artists had that, you know, they really felt like they were living at the edge of the world, just like, you know, New Zealand artists would have.
Yeah.
And all the latest trends were 10 years out of date before they reached them, and so they felt like also-rans rather than, you know, part of the proper art world.
Great. And a couple of good, strong female characters too.
Yeah, it describes all sorts of practices that I have to assume did happen. Male artists taking credit for women painters' work, either claiming their work as their own or hiring women at a pittance to paint for them and then signing it. The painter Muriel led something of a scandalous life, and although she was quite pure by comparison with the male artists, it was her notoriety that was her fame rather than her ability that was just seen as a side issue. And this was very deliberate in terms of the author's intention. She specifically stated that her impetus for writing the book was to give voice to earlier generations of women who weren't acknowledged for their art and who were written out of history. And it's one of those questions we often hear people say, well, where were the women artists, the women writers, whatever? You know, I guess they weren't good enough. And this, you know, gives an alternative reason why.
Okay, and that magic year, 1992, is it significant that it sets then and not in 2019?
I think just so that our protagonist can still be alive. There are some, you know, really 90s moments in there. My favourite was Jane, the young woman, invested in a fancy new Walkman. She had a dictaphone, but she upgraded to a Walkman so that Muriel could record her memories. And she had a pile of C90 tapes. And she has to keep going to the shops to get some more C90 tapes. And when she goes there, the guy's like, oh, don't you want some of these cool new mini, you know, those micro tapes. Remember those little tiny little tapes that you could record on?
Yeah.
And she said, no, I want the traditional, the old school C90s, thank you. And it's got some really very familiar imagery, that neighbours style Aussie suburbia, mullet haired blokes in jandals eating fish and chips out of the newspaper and kids getting lifts on the back of someone's chopper push bike. So it's got that real 90s vibe to it, but the main thing, I think, is because our protagonist is still alive in 1992.
Okay, well, tell us about this other book. So that one was called The Artist's Portrait. Tell us about tell us about Peggy Frew's book, The Islands, or just Islands.
Just Islands, Peggy Frew. This has one of those stickers on it that, I don't know, I'm just contrary, love it or your money back stickers. And I'm like, well, I might not love it.
Yeah.
But, but actually, I found this to be a very classy book. Quite different in tone than the previous one, and I'll talk about that in a moment. Peggy Frew's had a claim for her previous work, especially one called Hope Farm, which in 2016-17 won a raft of accolades. Islands is a story about family disintegration. It sounds very depressing, it's not. It talks about the wounds that follow us, especially when you're a child, when you have a parental breakup. It moves back and forth in time, but the pivotal period again is around that late 80s, early 90s, when the two sisters in the family are young and their parents separate. And then the focal point of the story is, and this isn't a spoiler, it's on the back cover, so it's very fundamental to the sales pitch of the story, is the disappearance of the young sister, Anna. And the time frame in this one is very important. It's both a place marker, but also to remind us what life is like for the characters. And one chapter, Christmases, makes use of the passing of time in a very sad way, but I'll just read a short passage to you if that's okay. 1994, Avoca Street. Anna missing 2 weeks. Presents for her will remain under the Christmas tree unopened until packed away along with tree, synthetic, reusable, purchased circa 1980 by Helen in late January. When Helen moves out of Avoca Street in August 1995, presents will be transferred to her new house and will remain in storage until she moves again in 2001, when they will be donated to the Salvation Army, still wrapped, but with cards removed. Mm. And that really sad progression of acceptance that she's not coming back, that, you know, evolves over time. And that really spare writing style is very characteristic of this book. She's almost poetic some of the time, and that she says more with what she leaves out than what she keeps in with the description.
Interesting tense in that paragraph you read out there as well.
Yeah.
Was that just a random one-off, or is the whole book written like that? It's almost future tense.
Yeah, chapter introduction, so not so much. That was more like a, almost like a play, like a scene setting. So it's not necessarily like that all the way through, but the spare language certainly is a feature of the story.
And it, are the 90s a feature of the story?
Ah, this was a gold mine for somebody who's a bit of a nostalgia tragic. The girls have Sonic Youth posters and Nirvana posters on the wall. They read The Chocolate War for school, which I haven't heard of that book for ages, but that was really big back in the day. They wear Body Shop lotion and cherry lip balm, and they make mixtapes of The Breeders and Smashing Pumpkins. And one of the presents that's under the tree for the missing Anna is a long sleeve maroon top with velvet at the neck and the cuffs. And I can see that top. I probably coveted it in the 90s. I can imagine someone like Ginger Spice wearing it. And so the near history of the book, it does press some nostalgia buttons. And, you know, I talked about the really spare prose. She gives a description of a party where there's a drunk young mother called Cindy who's taken her three-year-old daughter Misty along to the party and tries to put her to bed in the corner. And we don't get a description of Cindy, what she looks like, what she wears. She doesn't have a lot of dialogue. But I can just see her so clearly. I know exactly what she looks like. I know what her daughter looks like. And our familiarity with the scene, because it is a part of recent familiar history, helps fill in the gaps without us needing to be told. And I think that's quite a gift that she has for being able to describe things like that.
Okay, so that was Islands. And finally, the other book you're talking about today is The Van Apfel Girls Are Gone by Felicity McLean.
Long title, and I think this book's going to be really big. It's brand new, fresh out. I think officially it might not even have been properly released, but it is in the bookshops. It's been touted as a sort of picnic at Hanging Rock for a new generation, which actually I think is a shame. I think it diminishes something by having to relate it to something else, and I think that this book actually can stand alone without needing that reference. The Van Apfel Girls Are Gone is another first novel, but Felicity McLean, the author, is a journalist. She's also ghostwritten a number of books, autobiographies of sports stars, etc. So it's nice that she's got something under her own name. Again, more girls disappearing. I know it sounds really bleak, but
it's a great way to start a story.
We've got a mysterious dead artist in the artist's portrait. We've got the missing teen Anna in Ireland. And this book features three missing girls. The Van Apfel sisters vanish during an end-of-year concert. But like the other books, this one's as much about the effects of the disappearance on others as it is about the central mystery. That sort of falls into the background. And it really is written with a light touch. Not to minimise the disappearances, but it does have some really bleak, dark comic touches. It draws heavily on sardonic Aussie humour and understatement. It talks about the piles of meals and colour-coded Tupperware containers left on the doorstep for the bereft family. And the descriptions are quite in the vernacular. They use but at the end of sentences. So, oh, it was a good day, it was hot, but it really slips you into the time and place.
Yeah, definitely. Is there a 1992 in this one?
There is a 1992. It's set in the year 1992. I don't know what's going on with the Australia. Maybe it's a conspiracy in the Australian literary industry to get reviewed in New Zealand. But yeah, it's the other thing in common with these, again, three Australian books, but are very appealing for Kiwis. You know, we have our own issues with our colonial past and our suburban near present, our dry humour and the egalitarian myth and all this. So it is very familiar. In terms of the 1992, I don't know why, but I had a look up to see, just to refresh my memory about it. And I guess part of the choice is, as much as I hate to admit it, it's a long time ago. And it's now earned its place as a historic period rather than a contemporary period, which is how I sort of have been still thinking about it. But then I looked at what was the number one song in 1992? Eric Clapton's Tears in Heaven this week in 1992.
Right.
If we switch to next week, Criss Cross and Jump.
Yeah, I remember.
So, Jim Bolger was the Prime Minister. Ruth Richardson, just a few months previously, had delivered her infamous black budget. And in 1992, May 25, so about 10 days ago, there was The debut of a certain Kiwi medical drama with a doctor who had recently returned from Guatemala.
Great.
So when we think of it like that, 1992 is actually quite a way away.
Three Australian books, but good for Kiwis as well by the sounds of things.
Yeah, absolutely. Recommend them all. Pop into your local independent bookshop and check them out.
Lisa Glass, really appreciate it. Thank you very much for your recommendations. Catch you next time.
Thank you. See ya.